So, hi everyone, good to see you today, and welcome everybody online. We'll begin as we normally do by doing a short breathing meditation, then I'll set up a visualization, and we'll take refuge and generate a mind from light of it. So get comfortable in the seat, which basically means make sure your back is straight and the shoulders are relaxed. You can keep your eyes open or closed, whichever suits you. And when you breathe normally and naturally, become aware of the movements that take place in the abdomen or upper chest, whenever you inhale or exhale. While you're doing this, you'll find your body will naturally relax and your mind will become more gentle and stable. If you can imagine, you're 4 feet away from you in space, about the level of your eyebrows, a figure of Shakyamuni Buddha appears. So his body is made of golden light, and he's surrounded by all the spiritual mentors and teachers of the lineage, the meditational deities, and so forth. And the size of the Buddha is about 4 feet away, it's about the size of your thumb. Imagine that he's looking at you, and you can actually see his eyes looking at you. At the very same time, imagine that all sentient beings are seated surrounding you, and remember that every one of them is experiencing some form of suffering. Some are experiencing obvious pain and mental distress. Others, their happiness has vanished, changed. But every one of them is under the control of an all-pervasive conditionality. The sort of suffering that takes place in your body and mind aren't under your own control. No one wants this. In fact, everyone wishes to avoid suffering. And equally, each one of them wishes to be happy. But everyone lacks genuine happiness. Although this is the case, all these forms of suffering can be eliminated, and the potential for genuine happiness abides equally within all of us. To dispel the causes of suffering, to actualize genuine happiness, we have to abandon the eight worldly concerns and the four forms of attachment. We have to let go of our clinging to the things that we think are true. And this is all possible. So you should acknowledge this possibility and decide to do it for ourselves and for everyone else. So to help us do this, we can take refuge in those who have abandoned suffering and its causes. The Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas and the meditational days and so forth in front of us. Well, let's do that. We'll take refuge and generate the mind of enlightenment. When I go for refuge, since I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this wish, pick it from the heart of the Buddha, rays of white light, move out through space and wash over you and all the beings surrounding you. And they remove from you every cause of suffering and suffering itself. When you look around, you can see the sentient beings are still experience and suffering. And basically, this is because they haven't generated what they call the four immeasurable thoughts. So let's make the wish that they do so, and with an understanding that will help to do that. May all sentient beings have happiness in the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering in the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment to friends and hatred for enemies. And now from the heart of the Buddha, rays of golden light and multicolored colors, nectar moves up through space, washes over you and every other living being. So here's it, you have it in your continuum, immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy, and immeasurable equanimity. All of your good qualities have been revealed. In response, we make the seven-limb prayer. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present vows of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginning of this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma from the beginnings. I dedicate my merits over all others to the great enlightenment. I think that the deepest sources of our suffering come from this clinging that we have to the false appearances of reality. And here we're going to let go of that clinging, and in the absence of it, think that a wonderful pure land appears. We're going to offer this to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. In this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, the dawn of Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this is a Buddha field and offering. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. The offering is accepted, and the Buddhas and the refuge objects all smile at you. So once again, look at the Buddha's eyes. And with great compassion, you're accepted. The gift you've made to them has been accepted with delight. You see the refuge field of all the bodhisattvas and meditational deities and so forth begin to dissolve into light, melting into the central figure of the Buddha. From the heart of the Buddha, illumination moves through space and comes to the bottom of the crown of your head. Ascends through space, enters your body, and rests at the level of your heart. The light begins to expand, filling your body and mind. The light goes out through the pores of your skin and fills all space. And wherever there are beings that exist within space, they have been established in the fully enlightened state. And there's no difference between yourself and anyone else. In fact, from this perspective, all ideas of self and other have completely vanished. Light begins to draw from the directions of space, re-entering your heart. Find yourself embodied, breathing normally and naturally. And supported by the aspiration to develop your wisdom and your compassion and all of your good qualities until they're fully perfected so that you can help others do the same. I think, you know, this is the purpose of my life. This is why I'm here. So allow a sort of sense of joy to pervade your mind, to know your purpose, you know, the function of being a human being with leisure and an opportunity. And breathing deeply in through your nostrils, exhale through the mouth, and allow your eyes to flutter open. And then move it whichever way you'd like to. So we're up to class three, and we've done some work already. We've looked at what meditation and its purpose is. So we know that meditation is basically a method for accustomizing the mind to virtue, rather trying to generate virtue or accustom the mind to it. And the purpose, of course, is to bring about our own welfare and the welfare of any other living being. To remind ourselves of that, the motivation is of great importance. Whenever you meditate, always remind yourself of why you're doing it. And at the end of the meditation, dedicate your efforts. That's right. Dedicate your effort towards this goal that you're seeking. We know there are many different types of meditation. We talked in the first class like about 11 of them. But we're really focusing here for a while on what they call stabilizing meditation. And then we're going to move off then to sort of the meditations where you sort of analyze things, sort of get into the deeper nature of them. And lastly, we looked at how we could concentrate on the Buddha. So, of course, the Buddha is the supreme form of virtue. And that's why we try and visualize him and become familiar with his appearance. Remember last time we said last week, it wasn't necessary to get a clear image of him, but really get the feeling that the Buddha is in front of you and you engage with him. One of the best things you can do to do that well is to imagine the eyes. The eyes are looking at you. So you'd be a good girl.
I'm watching you.
Okay.
Weakness and understanding weakness, but you know, the ultimate weakness.
Right? Yeah. So, people see same thing, right? But remember, what's actually looking at you is you, it's your own awareness. You're just looking at your own behavior, but it's just a skillful means to go right. Because, as Miffy pointed out last week, you know, if you just have the eyes looking at people when you make donations. Just a pair of eyes. People put the money in. So it's a good time for you. It's a good idea to ask that question. And I encourage all of you, if there's something you're unclear of, or I say something like this, it's interesting, but you don't know why, please ask. And if I don't know, I'll tell you.
So in a way, it's like our own virtue and wisdom looking at us.
Yeah, it's you know, what we call conscience. Don't you have a conscience? And it sort of reminds us that, yeah, you know, we, of course we do. Mm-hmm. Now, when we come to meditate, what you find very quickly is that there's a lot of hindrances, but it's not easy. There's lots of things that make it difficult, that can even stop you even trying. So we're going to talk about some of them today. And these are sort of in relationship to what we talked about a little bit last week, about these 9 stages you can go through to develop deeper states of concentration. So today's topics, we're going to have a look at the hindrances of sleepiness and lethargy. We're going to bring up some antidotes to them. And then we're going to talk about the first step to developing serenity or calm abiding. And this picture here is a demonstration of all the stages you go through. And then what's called laziness and the antidotes to laziness.
Right, some crucial prescriptions here, Dan, for me at least.
Yeah. And so this is the material I've been relying upon. Primarily, I've relied upon these two, following the Buddha's footsteps and then straight underneath it, study and practice of meditation. Another one, of course, they have is also called walking through walls and steps on the path to enlightenment. Now, these are all good books. Some of them are just much more detailed. And when you get into the real deep details, it's very interesting. The sort of questions that people raise and the different types of answers you give. In terms of comprehension of this material, probably the simplest reading you can do is Attention Revolution by Alan Wallace. And it's just great advice in that book. And Steps on the Path. Basically, you can just read through that. If you try to do walking through walls and study, it's like
a deep dive.
It's a deep dive. It's like you're in university and it's like, oh my gosh. You know. However, like I said, after a little while, that material becomes more interesting. Once you've sort of practiced a little bit and then your own questions come up, it's like that's where it's answered. So let's have a look now. So, you know, we've been doing this nine round breathing meditation. So, how have you guys been going with it? Is anybody trying that at home? Yep, that's okay, good. Yeah, so if you sort of forget or you want to be reminded at any time, you can always go online and go to Google and put it in, and they've got lots of people demonstrating it.
Including His Holiness the Dalai Lama doing
this. Yeah, and then they'll also add stuff to it. So you can see what we're doing at present is quite simple, and that's how I like to start. But then they also bring in even more visualizations so that you are, you sort of imagine the inner channels you've got, and you imagine the air going up, and you breathe it up to the nostril, goes up over your skull, comes down in front of your spine, comes down and then hooks up, and then when you breathe it up, it comes up through here. And you have to imagine all this, and it comes out the other nostril with the white light. It's very useful, and it's a simple exercise to do, and it does calm you right now. So we won't do it yet. You won't do it. You've done it, and this what we're going to talk about today is a bit, a lot of information. So we'll probably end up doing a shorter breathing meditation. This sort of calm us down. We go from one part to another. Okay. So stabilizing meditation is what we're talking about. So as I said before, it's you fix your mind firmly on a single object or topic. It's got these other names called placement, concentration, and samadhi. And one of those instances of placement, concentration, or samadhi is a meditation called calm abiding, also known as serenity meditations or shamatha. And that picture that we showed was the development of the nine stages of concentration until you get to shamatha, serenity. So serenity is the outcome of those nine stages. But every other state is a state of concentration or placement meditation. Now, to do this, it's not easy. So we need the support of as many other conditions we can get. So I'm going to mention the six conducive conditions and just say something about them. And you should know that there's much more information on this before, deeper information you can find online by just going to Google and putting in karma body or shamatha, and you'll get a heap of people talking all about it. Or you can rely on those other books I've mentioned. Here are the six conditions. We need a favorable place to try and meditate. You need to have a clear understanding of what you're trying to do. Have a few desires. The reason, why do you think that might be?
It's a distraction.
It's a distraction. You want to get up and do it.
You're thinking about dinner.
That's right. You're thinking about a whole lot of things, actually. So, knowing this really, it's required you try to be as content as possible with what you've got and why, and that helps if you know why you're doing this. Have few worldly activities and have a pure ethical conduct.
What's the difference between having few desires and contentment?
Well, let's come to them. We'll go through to the word. So have a favorable place. So in other words, you need some place quiet. So this six conducive conditions is really put up, I guess, for the idea of going on to a retreat. However, before you go on to a retreat, you want to do practices at home or wherever you are, so that when you get this, it doesn't chuck you around so much, you know. You've got some confidence, you know what you're doing, you go there, you've got a good starting place. Whereas if you just go in first off, you might give it up pretty quickly. So you want a favorable place. So let's just suggest that we're not on retreat. You need to have a quiet room, in other words. You don't want dogs barking next door or have renovations going on around you. The biggest problem you'll have is noise. So if you are at home and it's not as quiet as you would like it to be, you can get noise-cancelling headphones.
Or just really good earplugs.
Or really good earplugs, yeah, if you don't mind them going in there. And at home, basically, like you'd be doing on your own, I imagine, if you're not, and we do one here, or if you were to be on a retreat, it's good to have other people on the retreat doing the same as you. Oftentimes you think you can do it by yourself, but you find it's much harder to do it by yourself. But you'll be doing it by yourself while you're in the room, and that's tremendous already. So it's sort of like when you're in the company of others, it's sort of a bit easier. And just that energy, it's supportive. Not only that, when different hindrances and questions come up, if you're by yourself, you've got no one to ask. And so it's good to have, you know, the company of the other meditators or a senior person leading you through it to say, this weird thing's happened, or this is what's happening to me now, can we talk about it? Like, but if you're at home when you're doing it, then I said, what I'll do is, there's no one there, but you've got a computer, put the question online. You'd be surprised what you could find out. Or else, like I said, hit these different books. Now, the second one, I haven't been clear on this thing, so prior to entering a strict retreat, you have to know the clear and correct understanding of the instructions. So this is how, what you do at home is like, you know, you try and get clear about what you're trying to do. And this class is to help you do that as well, isn't it? I mean, it won't be really deep, but to get some ideas of what to do, and especially what we're going to do is look at some of these different hindrances and what you can do about them.
But even just in any meditation session, we need to know what we're doing. Because I remember when I was living in Melbourne and we went off to the Kagyu Centre to do meditations, you know, it was 1 hour meditation. And so I was kind of fluffing around getting my seat ready while he was giving the introduction. And by the time I got comfortable, it stopped saying what we're meditating on. So then I spent the next 55 minutes sitting there going, I wish I had listened. I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing. So I really learned my lesson.
Actually, that reminds me, so one time, a few years ago now, I went to a we were in Sydney for some, maybe the islanders. I went off to a Kagyu Centre, same sort of type thing. And then they did their meditations, and I had all these questions straight away. And I went, you couldn't ask them because it's like, what's happening? that's what happens. like I said, it's like I said before, beginners. You know, so, yeah, ask away.
Well, actually, even occasionally in meditation, a really, really, really beginner will just, in the middle of meditation, oh, how do you do that?
Yeah. You want to know beforehand, it really does help. So now the next one, when it comes to having a few desires. So this, what we're sort of saying here is that our desires arise through our senses. Right? So we see something nice, we have desire for it. If we hear something pleasant, desire can arise for it. If we're not, you know, we might be sitting there and we start thinking about the food when lunch coming, or I've got this in the fridge. Right? So that's what they're talking about. These they call it like renouncing the five objects of sensual desire. So what are the things that you touch, like the things that you hear, the things that you smell, want to eat, all, you know, the five senses, those objects. So you go sort of, you know, I mean, this is what we should be trying to do at home now, isn't it? Because if you know, okay, when it comes to this retreat, these conditions are there, I know about it. I might as well start training myself now at home. So I know some, you know, some people, like, they've got to have their seat. And some people really want to meditate in these special clothes. So if you're going to be like that, well, put them on like at home now. So if you're going to do a retreat, you don't have any desire for them, you've got them. Right? And they're just ordinary now. So you try and work your way around these things. The next one is contentment. So everyone wants to be satisfied and content. One, you don't want more. You don't want better. This is easy to do at home, isn't it? Because you've probably already got more and it's pretty good already. But sometimes if you go off on a retreat and you don't have that control, it's like you might get food you don't like. That does happen. It's happened times. You know, retreat, there's plenty of complaints in the kitchen, right, about the sort of food, because it makes a difference. The type of food you eat makes a difference.
Discover your flatmate snores.
Yes, actually, that's true. So when a person I know went on a retreat and left the very next morning. Right? We found that she was put in this room and this woman was snoring, really loud snoring. Anyway, she's writing us, well, can you pick your mattress up and go into the hallway? It was like, tried all these things, she'd touch her and and then just start up again. So she said, I can't do like 8 days meditation on the mind with somebody like that. No way. So she went out and asked for her money back. I'm out of here.
Just bought some
earbuds. Yeah, so this is the thing. So often when we go up to the CI, we always suck up the insect repellent.
Take the earplugs.
You know, you sort of get ready. And that's what helps us doing shorter things and knowing where you have your own difficulties. You fight them out through your own experience. All right. And oftentimes we're here, like Miffy would always give a health package. These things really help. Like one of the other things that really helps is having a sleep mask. Because if you're sharing a room with somebody and they stay up late, all these sort of things. So it's like you've got to find ways of dealing with this, otherwise you'll drive yourself nuts. You will become discontent.
And actually, even with the food, like I found if you just bring up your own little supplements, then it doesn't matter what food you get, you can kind of relax. So to have some strategy to keep your mind happy, to be ready for it, because it's never going to be perfect on retreat.
Yeah, things go not as well as you'd like them to. One of the worst things that happens to you is that you're doing really well and somebody else doesn't like you. That's what happens. Your group retreats, you've got to put that down to karma. You've never met him before. And they start looking at you with daggers and stuff like this. It's like, they're really set your mind off. It's like, they're going to call upon everything you know now. Not to think badly of yourself, not to think badly of all that stuff, you know. It happens. It really does happen. Actually, retreats sort of bring out the worst in people, which is sort of in a way you think that's what you're trying to do. So you can only deal with the worst if it's out there.
Yeah, and you're not putting your social face on anymore, but it's a bit of a shock for people to find that it does. It is so revealing about your own personality.
Yeah, but the thing you're in is like, we're all in this together. This is the job, isn't it? So you've got to, like I said, keep coming back to the motivation. Keep reminding yourself of what I am and the other people on the retreat are trying to do. It's like this way of sort of revealing the worst of ourselves to deal with it and to walk out there a little bit better than how we came in. But it's not all that easy. So then the next one, I'm having few worldly activities. So in other words, don't take, like when you go into your room maybe, be very careful about where your phone is.
Trying to get on Facebook.
Try not to engage yourself too much with the outer world, in other words. And we know how we do that. It's usually through the phone, or if it's not the phone, it's a big computer. And lastly, they mean by pure ethical conduct. So what we try and do is to control your coarse physical and verbal actions. So in other words, when you go there, you don't want to be punching or hitting anybody, looking at you bad. Don't be killing insects. Restrain yourself from the physical actions.
Restrain yourself from the speech. People are trying to hook up with them.
Which often happens on retreats too. That's right. There's not unusual things. That's right. All the stuff comes up. So these are what they call the coarse afflictions. So it's a great thing to bring it up because then we know. And if you don't know what it happens to you, you might just go right along with it. This is something I love to see the Dark Buddha saying, I teach with open hands, I'll show you everything. And I'm not holding anything back here. And I think that's how we approach it. It'll be much easier for us to engage in any sort of retreat and not be harsh on ourselves or others. So we do need, like, these conditions really help. And like I said, so when you, if you're at home, then pure ethical conduct, you know, you won't be speaking with your mouth will be closed while you're sitting there doing your meditations. You won't be killing things. So you've already got that, you know, the core stuff's under control.
Dean says it sounds like a retreat is a bit like a Buddhist bridge camp.
Yep, that's for sure. That's right. So you want to do your own private ones at home, Dean.
Get ready.
Yep, that's right.
Holy
science. Yep, that's right. Yeah, so when they talk about this, so there's nothing different, which I haven't mentioned, is like there are unfavorable places.
Yeah.
What would that be? Like, for instance, meditating near a stream. Well, why? Because the running water.
The running water, yeah. The sound is agitating, and it's like that subtle continuous movement instead of keeping your mind still. But also because near running water or a dam or a pool like that is where a lot of nagas and other creatures live. And so...
And in, like, here, don't you, that, in summertime, it's a great place for the mosquitoes. So they often say don't meditate like in ravines. Yeah? Like go high up. If you're out there in the wilderness somewhere, yeah, that's right. So you find something that can be very favourable. So Ben is mentioning caves where other meditators have meditated, where other holy beings have meditated. So those we see, that'd be like a favourable place to meditate.
And also here at Library Thomas Centre, where, you know, all those great beings have stayed, like Trungpa Rinpoche and Geshe Sherpa and Geshe Zopa. And so we have our retreat room here, where it's really different doing a retreat here than at home, because there is a power of a holy place.
Yeah. And so you might also find, you find this out through your own experience, where some places you just know, like, it ain't working for you. Yeah, so that's okay, so this is not favorable for you. Try and find a different place. But yes, Ben, so there's extensive commentary on this material. It could get quite large, actually. So here I'm just like pointing out, it's just a slide with the points on them. I'll just say a few things about each. Yeah, at home it's quite easy, isn't it? Like, you know, if you're not meditating on hours and hours, I hope you do a bit short meditations. And it's quiet and you're in a room that you like, it's favourable to you. The kids or the dogs or the pets can't be there, or if they are, they don't bother you. No, so it's a bit like that. Now, even if you find all these, you get a place that is conducive to meditation, other things are going to bother you. And these things here are really internal hindrances. So let's have a look at those, and there are five of them. So the first is sensual desire. So this is a funny thing that happens to you. As soon as you just shut yourself away from people, you start thinking about them. They're all around every day, don't give a second thought. You lock yourself up, all the repressed stuff, all the stuff that just starts bubbling up. Yeah? Not only that, but past harms that people have done to you also come to the surface. Lethargy and sleepiness, which is what we're going to talk about today. Restlessness and regret, which we'll talk about next week. And deluded doubt. So these are the five major hindrances, and they talk about these hindrances are common to the Pali tradition, the Tibetan tradition, and the Chinese Buddhist tradition. So in other words, they go right across human beings, basically. These do actually hinder your meditation. And they hinder you in different ways. And of course, they've all got causes. So it's great so you just find the causes and go alter the causes or change the conditions so the causes don't arise. Now, these hindrances, they all obstruct the mind from abiding calmly and stably on your meditation object, whether that's the Buddha or the breath or some other object. So it's the work of the samadhi or concentration to clear away these hindrances and calm the proliferations, all the thoughts and moods that you have. But to do that, you've got to sort of know what they are clearly. So you can actually apply the antidote. But sometimes you have stuff happen to you and you don't, you know, you just don't know what it was, what happened. Sometimes you find you can't do meditations and you sort of get cranky about it and like you don't know why. So we've got to sort of try and find out what's going on inside you. It's hard to discern what these are too, because when they take place, they're so close to one another, or you can start right, you want to start off with desire and next thing it's malice. And then the sense of restlessness goes up. And then there's suddenly, you know, regret about either the person you desired and never got them, and then the malice because you didn't get them. It's one after another. So
it's kind of like becoming aware of what's that internal dialogue that's going on all the time, yeah. And then we just kind of shut up the external speaking, and suddenly the internal dialogue's turned all the way up.
That's right. All the thoughts that have been driving the speech, it's itself be known. So, okay, so we're going to look at lethargy and sleepiness first. I'll put these two up because these are the questions I've asked in the exam. You know, of course, so we won't be covering sensual desire, malice, or deluded doubts. But we could touch on them towards the end if you're really interested in this and you sort of think, you know, this is actually my problem. I know there's a couple of students that come here, you definitely say doubt's one of their big problems. So for that sort of person, they should acknowledge and go, now, whenever I hear about this, I've always got this question, it keeps on coming up.
It's like a contrary attitude.
Yeah, that's right. So a contrary attitude. And then even when those doubts are solved, you don't meditate. It's just like, okay, well, that's done. But nothing actually changes. I'm just waiting for the next fault so I can have a go at that too. So you might find, if you like that, you go, okay, you've got a mind that's very doubtful about things. Let's have a look at the causes of lethargy and sleepiness. So first I'm going to tell you something about it, right? So sleepiness is the easiest one. But sleepiness is not lethargy, but they're very close to one another, sleepiness and lethargy. So sleepiness is just like, as you know, drowsiness. You become very drowsy. And this drowsiness is taken because your senses have withdrawn. You know, in other words, you've brought them inwards because that's meditation, isn't it? So I find this happening. You know, if I know there's a good show on TV, I'm not sleepy anymore. I'm not drowsy. I can stay awake. I can put three or four shows, one after another, and I'm not tired. But you put it in here, it's like, so that's what I mean by drowsiness, right? And it shows you the drowsiness doesn't have to come from being tired. Right? There's internal stuff going on that we're just not aware of. It's not so actually tiredness bringing that about.
Is a lot of it because we've stopped that external entertainment or stimulation?
Yeah, and you're just not sort of not used to it. And this is some. There's a difference between focusing out there and pulling it back in here. Like this requires a little bit of work, whereas that you just got to rest your senses on it and be entertained, isn't it? So I find this has been one of my biggest problems is drowsiness. And then it goes into sleepiness. And Miffy often says, so I'm in my room meditating on the floor. Miffy goes, "Oi, wake up, you're sleeping." I'm not. I can hear your story. No, I'm not. They have to say no. No, I'm not.
Bastard. I know they say then malice comes in. No, I'm not. I am not. Shut up.
Yeah, you can become, that's right. You can relax and then move into drowsiness and then go to sleep.
That's a fine line there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you've got to be relaxed. It's helpful to not eat before teaching, right? Because if oftentimes you eat and your tummy does all this work and it's like it's time to slow down, isn't it? So that's don't eat. Make sure you've got plenty of water beside you. So even if you feel yourself going like this, drink some water.
Don't listen lying down.
Don't listen lying down. Yeah.
And honestly, like with Getty Zopa, because he's so engaging, it just takes a little bit of a tweak and you don't get sleepy. But what I do is either take notes or I do crochet. So there is a real subtle thing of, you know, just a low level something that I'm doing, and that keeps me alert and engaged and listening. Really crucial. Otherwise, yeah, it's too, no, it's too overwhelming. And often, I mean, there is that joke too of every time a lama starts teaching emptiness, everybody just falls asleep in the room. Even if 5 minutes beforehand, they're all totally engaged. When it comes to a really challenging topic,
yeah,
where we have a lot of delusions, it's just like they must look out and just see the sea of nodding heads.
Well, also through a passion for what I kind of meant was it's almost like some sort of delusionary thing comes up in the form of tiredness.
Yeah.
Like it's an illusion.
Yeah. And what can happen is over time, it goes away. But just so don't be, you know, too upset about it. Just keep pushing yourself in front of them. Like, okay, yeah, okay, so I'm not off it, but I don't go straight to sleep. You know, like I know I miss a whole lot, but like I come back, I get something off it. The other thing is like, if you know, it's like, go and get some cold water and splash it on your face. There are a lot of really simple remedies for sleepiness. In fact, years ago, when we were in Sydney, was I put a hold on the stage with a number of different lamas, and they asked, what do you do when you get drowsy? So one of them told us that when he was at the monastery, there was a bush that grew these chili peppers, and he'd get the peppers, and he'd have one, and he'd just rub his fingers on it, and he felt it, and he used to put it on his nose. And I guess he was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And our Geshe-Tashi Tsering said he used to pull all the hairs out from underneath his arm.
Well, the Western version of the chili peppers is just have some fisherman's friends with you as your emergency teaching stay awake thing. And that's because they're so disgusting and they really hit you. So you're not going to scoff them as sweet, but they're a saviour in teaching.
I think one of the other example I can give you, many years ago, when they did the first Buddhist studies program at CI. So it was so hot. So we couldn't even do the teachings in the Gompa. We had to go outside, right? And like, you know, that heat was so oppressive. I went into, I got a bowl and got a face cloth, soaked it in water, put it in the bowl, and then put it in the fridge in the freezer. And it froze it. And I could feel it, I put it on my head.
Oh,
I could sit out and just kept your
icy hat.
Yeah, and as it came undone, I could put it around my neck. And go like this. But believe it, like 90 minutes of that, it's like, boy, I go and put it back in because it's so hard to, you know, like the drowsiness just kills it. So there are like simple methods like that, but there are also internal methods you could use too. But there's a whole slide on that. So let's just go through these. Some of these causes. Oh, sorry. So sleepiness is this drowsiness. We know what it's like to fall asleep, right? But then we have what they call lethargy, which is different. So lethargy manifests as a sort of physically, meaning that you lack physical energy. So that's when I find asleep, so you end up lying down or slouching. You don't have any stamina, either physically or mentally, to absorb the teaching. It's just heavy mind, heavy body.
So that's very akin to exhaustion too.
Yeah, so what you find is that your mind becomes dull. So years ago, like I said, another time I was up at CR, we did the teaching, and my God, I was so shocked at how dull my mind was. I guess I would say something, and then that sentence would finish, the next one would start, and I'd forget, I couldn't get the first one. Like, I just thought, it was really shocking. And I thought, like, oh, I can't even get the definitions. Are we going to get tested on them tomorrow? You know, I was up to like 3 a.m. trying to ram it in. It wouldn't go in, couldn't go in. And that's not the way to do it either. It doesn't work that way. And Kenzo Rinpoche noticed my light on a couple of mornings, nights in a row, right? 3 a.m, get up at 7, start practicing again. You know, he sent one of the nuns down to say, are you okay, Eddie?
No.
So it's very shocking to have something like that happening. I mean, basically you think, yeah, I'm okay, I can hear it, this is, I'll work it out. Suddenly you find you can't. So these are some of the problems that come up, and they can come up in later stages before the early part too. So it's just a real heaviness. You can feel quite bored. You don't want to exert any energy. And these two, lethargy and sleepiness, are dealt with together because they have the same cause, the same function, and they have the same antidote, although they are not the same. They're distinct mental factors, but same cause, function, and antidote. So they're caused by five particular factors, and here they are. Bad dreams, mental unhappiness, physical exhaustion, unbalanced food consumption, and being depressed. Now there are, like I said, these other four hindrances, but from one perspective, this hindrance is more problematic than any other. The reason for that is because you can miss it altogether. Right? It's like you could just be really dull and not even notice that you are. So it can take quite a while before you know you are, because somebody will ask you something, you get like, I don't know. Yeah, but we're all sitting there listening. It's sort of like that. Or like what happens with me and Miffy, I do it on the bed, I lie down and watch, it's like, and you know, I'm sure that I'm listening. So it's it can really creep in. The other ones can often be dispelled as you can simply recognize them, but here the mind becomes really cloudy and you become unaware that you're tired, dull. And like I said, you can find that having a lethargy or being sleepy is not necessarily because of stuff you've been doing physically. There could be other causes for it.
And that's what can be so frustrating about it, because you can't pinpoint anything that you've done wrong, and yet you have this overwhelming, you know, tiredness. Or just no enthusiasm.
Yeah. So, of course, once again, you know, like there are different things you can do, of course, to tackle these causes. And one of the simplest is, I'll quote first, right? So this is one of the methods you use to get rid of this lethargy and sleepiness.
Fran just has a question. What's the difference between mental unhappiness and depression?
There are differences, Fran, and I can't pinpoint them all, because I'm not going to even talk about all of this stuff. Because there are many different causes for depression. You can have different types of depression. And, you know, you can say, Fran, for one thing, that you can be mentally unhappy, but it doesn't mean to say you're depressed. Mm-hmm. I think we all know that, don't we? And even depression itself has different, you can have different forms of depression, and there are different causes of them too. So you need to, for each person, I guess you've got to sort of check yourself, because you might find that some people, like yourself, Ben, right? So Ben found it very difficult to go off to do meditation things up at CI, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Well, sure, lots of it. Right? So we just have to acknowledge that and go, okay, no, I can't do it now. Try and work out what it is. And you go, what can I do about it? And it can take quite some time to get rid of these hindrances, these obstacles. So even though, like I said, there's plenty of techniques, we've still got to apply the technique. And just knowing it is one thing, it doesn't solve it. Just doing it once or twice might not solve it either. You might need to take a variety of methods. So one of the simplest things I've found out to do with drowsiness is coffee. Problem with coffee, though, is that for me, I get quite jittery. Right? So, now I found out this other thing where you make coffee with mushrooms and it doesn't have the caffeine thing in it, where you get all jittery. That's the thing.
That sounds so wrong.
Well, better than peppers. we've got to find our way. One thing I can say, don't use sugar drinks, because they get you up like this and you get the crash, and then it's no good either. Anyway, this is a quote here that I've put up. So it says here, the entire world is burning up by the fire of death. You should be seeking means of escape. How then can you sleep? You're like a person in shackles being led to his execution. With disastrous harm so imminent, how can you sleep? That's often what we use, we usually use sleep to relax and to get ready for the next day. That's how it should be. It's, it's part of our lives. But this verse is sort of saying, look, there's these terrible things that you're facing, like rebirth and cyclic existence. You could die at any moment, which you can do. Don't go to sleep now. Like, you should have been to sleep before. So now's the time to get ready. And that's what they're sort of getting at here. So to get ready is like you've got these hindrances that are making you fall asleep, become drowsy. Apply the opponent now. Do it now.
Yeah, because when we're facing fires, there's no way that you're sleeping. Even if you haven't slept in days, you're going to be like full on getting away from the fire.
Yeah. And this is, it's why I use this analogy. When they say the entire world is burning up by the fire of death. So death is one of the ways of identifying what they call samsara, uncontrolled death. And the fire, of course, are the afflictions and karma. And they're destroying our lives, as we sit here. But so you want to have that happen again and again and again, or you want to put an end to it? Because now's the time. That's what they're sort of getting at. So one of the simplest methods, which I never knew years ago when I was really dull, is to do prostrations. And they work, it works. And I know this from my own experience. Whenever you get obstacles in your learning or in your meditations, get up, do prostrations. And when you do the prostrations, use the four atonement powers. You can also use the body acceptance confessions of downfalls. But one of the most important things is like have the Buddha appearing to you as light. And so it's again, so you've got the light to counteract the dullness and the darkness, but the body's getting up and going down and coming up and going down and getting up. So it invigorates the whole body and the mind. So that's a real workable thing that does actually work. The other ones, of course, is this one here is remember death and impermanence. We are all subject to decay. While we're here, we are disintegrating moment by moment until we're gone. And that gone could happen at any time. That's not under our control. So, as we know, the purpose of meditation is to develop virtue, not die with a dull mind or sleep or anything like that. It's like, let's get some virtue going here. So we can use death and impermanence to sort of shock us out or find an uplifting topic. It's like when the mind is dull, it's like sinking. So you've got to find something to bring it back up. So we've got to start talking to ourselves about the great things about Dharma. Like for one, you might say, all the animals, every animal loves sleep, but I'm not a dog. Look at the cats during the day that just go to sleep. Like I'm a human being, I've come across this Dharma. So we're trying to invigorate our understanding of being a human being with the leisure and opportunity to engage in this. Because if you find yourself in a retreat with a few people, there are millions not there. But they just don't have the opportunity you have while you're doing this. And if you're at home in your room, you do the same thing. I am actually dealing with the source of all my problems. Man, that's amazing. Hardly anyone does it, are they? Everyone wants to just distract themselves.
Actually, on retreat too, that's what's so nice, that if you sponsor people to do a retreat or if you are partly sponsored, it makes a big difference with the amount of effort that you put in, because you think, all these people have given their hard-earned money for me to do this retreat, I better do it well.
Yeah.
It's really simple. It's just a few people and it has that effect.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's other simple devices you can use. Like I said, so I use coughing, something we put like a rubber band around your head, and sting. Click it, so like a clicking up. Oh, yep. In the Chinese monasteries, or if you're in a Zen place, there's a guy that walks around with a big stick. And if he says your posture's changed like this, I'll come across and whack you on the back. Yeah? So they don't hit you anywhere on the back, they hit you in a particular place. And that guy has to be skilled to do it. There's sticks designed to do it. It's got like a little clap as well.
So it barely touches you, but it makes this really loud noise.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's had to keep you up. Not only that, but you can, what I used to do, like Miffy was saying, when the Dalai Lama or other high lamas talk about emptiness, a lot of people just go like this. So I love the topic of emptiness. So what I often do is, like, I wouldn't sit down. I'd get the back of the hall and be walking up and down and listening. Because you can't walk, well, I can't walk and sleep. Or be on the nod. So it's like the second time, you know, it's like I'm walking, like I can hear it. And I go up there and I turn back. And oftentimes when I'm sitting down, I'll just say to Miffy, I'm going up the back because I want to get this in. So I'll get up and start moving my body. It's the same if you find yourself sitting and being really sleepy. Stand up. You can meditate standing, lying, sitting, walking.
And I mean, even at teachings, it's perfectly legit to do that because people have back problems and all sorts of things. So it's okay to stand up at the back of the room. No one even notices anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you know, there's much more on this, but we just mentioned some of the stuff. And now we're going to come to the sort of preliminaries or the different problems you're going to come up with when you actually start to meditate itself. So there's these other ones we've just done, and they come up, and these ones will also. So being lazy is the first problem you meet. Then forgetting the instructions, dullness and agitation, non-application and application. These are held to be the five faults, and there's eight antidotes for them. Four for being lazy, and one for forgetting the instructions, that's mindfulness or just remembering. Dullness and agitation is introspection. Non-application is application. And application here means over-application. It means you over-apply the antidotes when you don't need to. So let it go, you know. It means come back to equanimity. So in developing what we call this karma binding, when you take teachings on it, there's two types of major teaching they give you. One is this one here. And then there's another one where they talk about the different powers and the stages you go through. What you usually hear this one, you go right, and you hear this one, and then they integrate them. And you put them both together, and then now you've got all the instructions to engage in this path. And when you look at that picture of the winding steps, that's got all of them in there. So it's not just the nine stages. There are nine stages there, that's for sure. But it's got all this other information in as well. So I put up this sort of table, right? So we started off with laziness. So once I would put all the faults first, forgetting the instructions. Yeah, we don't identify laxity and excitement. So that's a problem. Then you don't apply the remedies when you do have them. And then you over-apply the remedies. So what are the remedies? Well, they come down this side here. In terms of faith, aspiration, exertion, and pliancy, these are the four main opponents for laziness. So you can be lazy in different ways. And these opponents are for this particular
type of laziness,
or yeah, because we're talking about developing concentration here, it's the laziness to do with concentration, which you can also have laziness to do with other topics as well. And I said, so mindfulness, meaning just remembering the instructions, that helps you overcome forgetting the instructions. Introspection lets you know, oh, it's relaxed, my mind is dull. Oh, I'm getting excited, I need to bring it back to where it should be. I've moved off the meditation object. That is what introspection is like, a spy. Whereas mindfulness is like the guard. You see, you don't apply the antidotes when you apply them. And when you over apply them, you desist, you stop applying antidotes when there's no need to.
And it might sound strange, but it's kind of what happens because you get so into applying the antidotes that you don't stop and you overdo it. It's like Yeah. When you're cooking or making something and you overdo it, you don't know when to stop.
So I do have a little bit more won't hurt. So this spice, this one. Then it's like, oh, I can't tell any difference at all. And they said about me was gardening too. It's like, just take this off. Oh. And then you just get the stalk.
And he actually pruned a tree in my retirement center in Newmarket that when I left the house was a tree. When I came back, it was one pole.
So often.
Over application.
So the big problems at the beginning is laziness and forgetfulness. They're the big ones. And they go through the first three stages at least. So which is good because then you can become very familiar with, oh, that's what that is. Now I know what to do. So this laziness, there's three types of laziness. So let's have a look at them. The first is the laziness of procrastination, or you shrink away from practicing. So in other words, you sleep a lot, you sleep around a lot, you lie around a lot, you don't do much at all, you just procrastinate. I'll put it off till later.
I'll just look at this YouTube clip first.
Yeah, so you know, this happens. We've got students here that they want to do it, and they look at their phone and they tell me, well, man, I'm so sorry. I look about 6 hours on my phone. It's the phone, is this, well, that's right. That's procrastination. That's really like the obvious one. They call it that's a type of laziness. The second one is the laziness of hustle and bustle. So you say, no, I've got too much, I've got so much to do. Or I'll vacuum the floor first. I'll just do the bathroom. Oh, my room's a bit messy. I'll do that first. Then I'll sit down and meditate. So you find lots of activities to engage in, but you don't actually meditate. So one's like just being tired, sleepy, not doing anything. The other one's you do plenty, but it's not any meditation. Work, socializing, shopping, looking at the latest things on your device. Yeah, you say, no, I've got this to do.
Could you possibly include, I'll read a Dharma book rather than meditate?
That is a way of... not right, good. Yeah.
That's my thing.
Yeah. This is really sort of attachment to ignoble activities.
Right.
Yeah. So studying Dharma is not an ignoble activity, but it will get you in the way. It's a form of avoiding it, isn't it? And the last one is what they call the laziness of being discouraged. Somewhere either you think you can't, I can't do it. I am inadequate. So they call it the laziness of self-contempt. And what often happens is that you think that you want to do it, but then the thought just dies. It's not because you're being lazy, and it's not because you're really busy. It's something that goes. Yeah, that's right. So you feel inadequate. I couldn't. I can't do that. That's right. There's laziness of inadequacy. You find plenty of reasons why you just couldn't possibly do it. So that's where you've got to remind yourself of the fortunate human rebirth, Buddha nature. Tell yourself those stories of a fly can go around a stupor on a piece of cow dung, and that can attain enlightenment. Of course you can.
I find it's really interesting that it's called self-contempt, that when we don't recognise our fortune and our potential.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting way of putting it that kind of jumps you out of it.
Yeah. So to work against this laziness, we've got these four forms of faith, right? Are the four things in the faith, remember? So what you start off with is you've got to be convinced, first of all, of the benefits of the meditation. If you don't know that, if you're not clearly convinced, you're not inspired, you won't do it. Once you've clearly looked at all the benefits of it and are convinced it's possible to be done, then you have an aspiration to do it, a wish to do it.
And that's really different from thinking, oh, I should do it, putting the heavy on yourself.
You want to do this. And it often arises through actually, you know, getting, feeling some of the goodness that comes just by trying, just by making the attempt. Which leads to an irreversible effort. So after that, so no matter what people say to you, you're going to be doing it. You won't allow the doubts won't come up, all that sort of stuff. So you're on your way. That's where you get people who will do 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at night. Or they've got a practice. Every day, I do my practice. And that really comes about through discovering for yourself the benefits. It's working for you. It's making a difference. Which leads to the actual, you know, antidote, which is called pliancy. But to actually have pliancy, you need the other three. So this is where you have a mind, so you want to sit down, you like to sit down, the body's comfortable sitting down, the mind is comfortable meditating. It wants to meditate. It knows what to do. So this is what they mean by the pliancy. You've got a flexible body and mind. So you sit down and start meditating.
So you're not going to end up all stressed.
No. No, you actually know this is actually working against stress. And you want to do it. You want to be there. Now, this term actual pliancy is quite interesting to read about in the book Walking Through Walls and another quite thick one. So, obviously, in that book and the Meditative States by Leah Zala, it's really in depth, you know. So, they go through what actually happens to your body and mind as you go through these stages, they differentiate all. And that's why I like to read it. Because once you start, you get a taste of this, you start doing it a bit. You want to know this stuff. So this is the first really major obstacle that comes up, right? The sense of this laziness. So we're going to look at this first stage of placement meditation. So it's called placing the mind. And the drawing is just like this. You look at it. Got the nine stages, and I've just pulled off this first part. So it's the very first part. You can see there's behind the monk is a monastery. Then there's a monk, and he's holding two things in his hands. There's a river pouring down here. There's something floating up in the air. There's a black elephant, and there's a monkey in front of it, and they're running. And just over here in the corner, there's some flames. So this part, in terms of the powers, is the power of hearing. So you actually know what to do. How do you know what to do? Because you heard it. That's symbolized by this monastery, the building. It's like you're here, you're hearing. You've been to class, right? So you've listened to somebody talk to you about it, you've read the books, you're pretty cluey about what you're about to do. So you've heard the instructions. So you know that you can direct your attention to the object. Now, the rope that the monk is holding in his hand represents the power of mindfulness. So the rope is in the hand down the bottom there. It's got that green rope in it. So that's the rope. Mindfulness means I remember. You remember what to do. But you can see it's not around the elephant. It's still in his hand. And in the other hand, he's got what they call a goad. And that's introspection or vigilance. So that vigilance knows, the rope of mindfulness is not around the object. So the object here, the black elephant, of course, is the mind. And it's running. So the meditator has no control over the mind. It's on the run. And what's leading it is distraction, the monkey. Excitement. That monkey jumped from here to there. After all the different fruit of the senses. Yeah. And this piece of cloth floating in space there represents the objects of the senses. So here's the object of touch. So I looked at it and I thought, so when you begin meditating, one of the first things that happen to you become aware of is how much your body hurts. So your mind becomes distracted to sin, this body. And this river that's pouring down here demonstrates the flood of thoughts that you become aware of. When you see, you bring your attention in and start to meditate, that's the person you want to meditate. Like, there is no object. It's just whoosh, whoosh. So it's a terrific way, isn't it? It's like that story of, you know, a picture telling you, you know, a thousand words. So it's all there. And so that's something that I, you know, suggest you try and become familiar with, because a picture's easy to hold. There are lots of written instructions. Of course, you go through the written instructions like I've got here, so you rip it back across the picture and you say it to yourself. So that when you are like flooded with thoughts, it's fine. That's how it is. It's not like it shouldn't be like that.
Then you can think, oh, stage one.
Stage one. Yeah, this
I
is stage
it.
One.
I'm on stage one. Woo!
Yeah. Well, you get off it and knowing that you're off it too. That's the lovely thing. You get to stage two and know when you're actually on it. So here's the same thing, but much more, you know, less color. So place in the mind you have problems and you've got solutions for them. So the problems are this laziness. You just don't want to do it. You can do any of those three things. Right? I don't want to do it. I'm too busy to do it. I can't do it. These are the forms of laziness. So you've got to tackle them. The other thing is, the major thing that comes up is when you come to this, you forget the object. So in other words, you forget your instruction.
So that just means you end up thinking
about other stuff. Yeah, the mind is, like I said, the elephant of the mind. You thought, oh, it's like this. You know, I've got to just put it on here and it's not.
The monkey's over there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, excitement, thinking of the past, the future, just takes it off. And that's normal. So this thing is like, you know, don't be discouraged when this thing happens. It's like thinking that you can go down to the gym, first time ever, watching somebody lift a big weight up. Well, you can't do it. And the mind can't do this.
And sorry, what did the flames mean?
The flames represent how much effort you've got to put into it. There's a big fire at this stage, right? But you see the fire diminishes as you get up. Effort is less and less and less, because you get better and better and better at it. It's like, you know, when you go to the gym, you can't lift 40 kilos, but after a few months, you can. Then you come back to what you originally started with, which is like 5 kilos, just go there, no problem. It's easy, but no effort. So the solutions here are faith. So you've got, you know, this, the part, the conviction, the clear certainty of all the good qualities. Remind yourself consider the good qualities. Whatever you're not doing, remind yourself. When you're not in meditation, remind yourself of what you're trying to achieve, what you'd be like if your mind was stable and clear. And how does that happen? By reading more material on the stuff, listening to it. Go on YouTube, listen to the people, and just about the stage. And what you've got to do is like, requires you to tighten your focus, which means you've got to bring your mind back and like try and hold it on that object. Be proactive about your learning. Be proactive about your trying. So, like, what I used to do is, like, so if I'm somewhere sitting anywhere and I'm not doing anything for a second, I do three mindfulness on the breath. No one knows. Just my mind can go anywhere. It's on the breath. Yeah, one. I got one. And start with one. Because one, if you can do one, you go, great, I can do one. Then you do another. And you can always, the other thing, you can always do one. So wherever you are, nothing's happening, your mind is off. Oh, I can do this. Because if it's off wherever it is and you haven't actually directed it there, it's just running. That's actually working against what you're trying to do. You go, oh, that's right. I don't want to do that. That's what's always doing. I need to guide it. So I'll just guide it now, one breath. And out. And what I'm doing, I'm just going to be aware that I'm just breathing. That's it. I'll tell you something now, which will come up later, and to bring a sense of joy in it because you did it. And even if you fail, still bring joy because you're trying. And so few people do.
Yeah, just to want to do it is really going against the grain.
For sure. So I'll just say a few things, gosh, the time's running away. So you have to observe the identity, you have to identify the observed object and place the mind on it. Even though your attention won't remain on it for very long. To do this, you have to withdraw your attention from external objects and place it on your meditation object. Don't allow your mind to follow distracting thoughts, sounds, and so forth. So, of course, it will, but what they're saying is don't let it keep going. Like, as soon as you notice it, then bring it back. Put it on where you're meant to. The appearance of the object will not be very clear because the mind will be filled with discursive thought. That's okay. That's natural. All that's happening is that you're aware now of what your mind has been doing all the time before you work. That's all that's happening. This is discursive thoughts are automatically pacified in the process of progressing through these stages. So don't be discouraged. As your mindfulness strengthens, the flood of thoughts gradually subside. So in other words, as you remember what to do and do it, the flood of thoughts gradually diminish. So let's do one now. It's 25 fast. I've only got a couple of slides to go. So let's do one. So here, a really simple one. What I want you to do is do a couple of deep breaths so you can relax. But after you've done that, I want you to, on each time you breathe in and you breathe out, I want you to go like one. In, out, two. In, out, three. In, out, four. In, out, five. Up to 11. When you get to 11, I want you to count backwards. And if you forget, to start from the beginning again. Okay? So get yourself comfortable. Maybe take a deep breath in and exhale, and then, start one or two breaths like that, then start. So breathing in. Let it all out. One more deep breath in. Okay, begin the in and out breath with the count. Okay. So I don't know how you went, but you got to share what you think. What happened? You have to get Ben.
I had a shot. Went to
13. I remember. Oh, it's 11. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I almost did, but I thought, remember
the shot. Anyone else?
Yeah, I got back down again, but I had a scuffle at 3, and then I couldn't remember 3, 4, 2. Dang, I was so close. But also, I would pass out if I breathed as slow as you.
Yeah, so you find that people breathe at different rates. And for me, I was like, oh, I think I've been a hurry. I look at the time, but yeah. Man, it's 5 minutes. Like, I think it's going to be different for everyone. So did you notice the sounds?
No.
No? Do you feel your body move?
Yeah.
So this is, okay, sorry. So this is one of the most simplest meditations of all, because numbers is easy, easier than other things. So sometimes it goes one, it doesn't go one, two, one, two, one, two, one, in, out, in, out, in, out. If it's hard, so try to make it simpler and simpler for yourself until you get it one right. Okay, now I can do it. Now I move to the next stage, to the next stage. So a meditation on the breath, you can do it all these different ways, and it can go all the way up to enlightenment, basically, but the karma body. If you start on the body and just notice, so numbers and the body are real big objects, so it's quite easy. But even though sometimes you forget, so that's okay, just go back to one. No, is it 3 or 4? I've got to start again. I've lost the number. That's okay. In fact, you get stronger by forgetting and starting again. So don't be displaced. It's like going to weights. It's like you put it up and you bring it down. And when it's down is when the muscles actually grow. It's not when they go up. So it's when you lose the object and then try again. That makes the mind stronger. If you're not losing it, your mind's already pretty strong. Right? You're doing real well. So then you make the object a bit more subtle. And you find, oh, actually, it was easy over here, but it's a little bit harder now. That's why you start with a big object in the beginning. A couple of questions. Ben, you go first in the field.
Just a quick comment.
It's good as in the beginning, Ben. It's good to do it. It's like, just get out so you don't keep thinking about it. It's like, okay, now stop. Now, what was I doing? I was doing this. Right? Now you've got to go back and start again. 1, 2, 3. Oh, a thought comes. You want to pay attention? Great. Write it down. Go back to the beginning. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, that's right.
Busy, and it busy, does. Busy.
That's right. It just says you're busy, busy, busy.
Yeah.
And so when you, yeah, and that busyness becomes much more apparent to you when you bring the mind in, because you see all the busyness. But see, the thing here is that if you have an object that you're meant to go to, it's either the busyness or the object. Which one? So it can't be both.
Anthea and Dean. So Dean distracted on 4 to 5, then back on track. Then fully on thought at 10 to 11, then back on track.
Yeah.
Distracted on 4, back on track, and okay to the end. So, I mean, that's pretty much what happened to me too, yeah. Like halfway through, but just hold on there.
Yeah, so this is excellent. So it said that if you can hold to 21, so we just did 11, right? But if you can go up to the 21 and back down and hold it on those up, that's the first stage. Well, this is funny because I look at it and go, man, but then I've read on the second stage, it's like 90 seconds. And we just did 5 minutes. So I guess it depends upon how distracted your mind is. It'll change from person to person. But what Dina said, what Miffy's pointed out, this is the normal way, and just like you too, Ben, right? 1, 2, 3. Oh, I thought I got this, I should write it down. Okay, then you better come back and start again. 1, 2, 3. Because it's like in your thing, write it down, okay. If you weren't writing it down, you just notice the thought. And try to relax a little more. and do the next count. Thought's not the problem. Thoughts can come and go. The thing is, you just got to keep counting. So the thoughts, the noises, the pains, the feelings, no problem. You let them take place. It's, the other thing is the number in this one. If you forget the number, then you come back. All those other things can keep taking place. They're always, they're in the background. But now we've pushed mindfulness of this numbering into the foreground, which is where we want it. If the thoughts take over, or the sound takes over, or you suddenly drop my knee or something else, okay, now you've lost your object. Now come back to one, start again on one. And work out some sort of time where you're going to do this. So you might go, like I said, you're actually putting your thumb down for 5 minutes. That's how long I'm going to make this attempt to get to 11 and back. And no matter how I go, I'm stopping at 5 minutes. That's it. Then you go, great, I did good today. And you can find 5 minutes here and there. You can even knock it down to 3 minutes. Just keep pushing, because that's how it works. You get all the lures. Like, little things add up to big things. But that's what you want. And, you know, we can do a little thing. It'll gradually get better, better, bigger, bigger. We get stronger, stronger. So just doing little things. Yeah, so don't give up. I'll just rush through these. Now, we've got other methods to overcome this laziness. In other words, not becoming fatigued. Think you're going to die. Next breath, I'm going to die. Better take one. Don't become attached to frivolity. So I've been, like you say, Ben, you've got all these thoughts going, oh, I've got to put it down, I've got to put it down. It's like, no, you don't. I mean, what are you going to do after you've written them all down?
Lose the piece of paper.
And put it away, isn't it? And others said, uphold the path. You are on a path to greater happiness, greater meaning. So uphold it. Count, like another number. Keep going. Between sessions, guard, so if you don't have vows, of course, they're an undue guard. Accumulate the causes. So what are the causes for this? Is study more, read more, think more about this. Find those little moments, one breath, two breaths, three breaths, and guard your senses. So in other words, don't keep going out there. If you have the chance of just sitting there and just watching something on television that's not really meaningful to you, you don't really need to see, don't do it. Because the senses are getting drawn outwards, and that works against you bringing them in. We're already, like, you know, if you're out there in the world, you're 8 hours out there, aren't you, straight away?
So it's kind of like being used to actually just even sitting with yourself.
That's right. That's basically what we're doing, sitting with ourselves, acknowledging the discomfort that can be, but getting used to it, not being reactive to it. We can, you know, behave kindly, more kindly to ourselves and others through doing it. And as I study the topic, sort of get like an overview, find, like I said, don't take long to do it. Yeah, you can do it watching a YouTube thing, just on these 9 minutes, just say, okay, while I'm watching it, it's there, I'm just at the same time going to breathe, normally and naturally. Watch, see if my mind can just stay on what I'm listening to.
And studying the topic also makes you far more interested in the topic.
Yeah, yeah.
Becomes really fascinating and want to dive in more.
Yeah, especially like you say, you know, you find yourself in the world later on when you find yourself normally reactive and you're not. That's tremendous, right? You go, oh my God. Like, yeah, I want to step straight back, but I haven't. And that's really because you've become much more comfortable dealing with your own inner world. You haven't lost it. You haven't lost your object. Because that's what you're doing when you snap back, isn't it? You've lost your sense of being you. It's like, it comes out. So if you can hold yourself back in just an internal world, believe me, you can hold it out in the external world. So I've looked at these hindrances of sleepiness and lethargy, antidotes to them. Looked at the first step on serenity. And we know that laziness actually works against us. Now there are 4 antidotes for it. So have a look at here we've got the FQMT readings. Have a look at number 1 there, it's page 21 to 25. There's a supplementary readings for number 2, and they're page from 1 to 5 and page 25. Number three is called Meditate Extras. So have a look at notes three, page 17 to 19. And there's also a picture of these nine stages. Like I said, you can find this anywhere. Just Google it. It will pop up. Nine stages of Shamatha. And next week, we'll look at forgetfulness, forgetting and excitement, and restlessness and regret as being the major hindrances to meditating. And then we'll move to the second stage of this serenity practice. We've been a bit excited, we've gone over, but nevertheless, we're going to dedicate the merit towards us, developing the mind, making it stable, and the foundation of stableness, developing all the good qualities of compassion and wisdom and skillful means to bring an end to our suffering and the suffering of others, knowing that none of it exists intrinsically, but all of it does exist in name. Okay, thank you, everyone.
We went over, but we didn't fall asleep going over, so that's good.
That's true. That's right.